Friday, March 18, 2021. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means betting on March Madness, baby. It is here. The best sporting event of the calendar year is upon us. Everybody has bets. Everybody has brackets. Everybody has pools. It is fantastic. I'm already out of my pool. I organized a survivor pool with other listeners and members of the community. I took UConn on day one, which felt like a pretty, I would say, not safe bet, but I liked it for sort of how I had planned out my picks, and they lost. So, I'm out, along with almost half the group. Some people had Iowa, another had Kentucky. They're out. So, I'm on to just bets. I have a couple long-term bets going. I have UCLA at 28-1. I actually put a bet on Arizona at 6-1 to win it all. And it's easy to say, well, this isn't, you know, you're not really getting a great number now that, yeah, but I know the path, and that's what mattered. So I have Arizona, I have UCLA, and I have a couple to make Sweet 16. I have Purdue to make the Sweet 16, Texas Tech to make the Sweet 16, and Wisconsin. So those are the bets that I'm sort of sweating out. I took Chattanooga at 450-1 because why not? I'm kind of hope I don't really anticipate that to get there, but at 450-1, if they can pull an upset even in this first game here, might have an opportunity for some interesting hedging. We'll see. But that's just sort of a fun lottery ticket to have in pocket. So if you want to sweat Chattanooga with me, now you know where I sit on that. Anyhow, so March Madness is here. I hope everybody is doing well. I know your brackets are busted. Do not act like you're the one that had St. Peter's. And if you did, you didn't have the rest. You didn't have Iowa. And if you did, if you had both Richmond, Iowa, and I don't even remember who beat UConn. But if you had all of those upsets, more power to you. But I can't imagine many of you did. Okay, this week's episode features Josh from Know Your Slots. You may have heard Josh recently on Art in a Game. He has a wonderful website where he posts daily articles all about slots. And it's not really a topic that I focus on here on The Better Life because slots has a very specific place in my gambling life. But because it does, I thought, hey, let's have someone on to talk about it. So Josh is going to talk to us about, of course, how he got into gambling, where he is now as a gambler, and things you should consider if you are either into slots, thinking about getting into slots, and how to sort of maybe evaluate players' clubs or welcome offers, etc. Lots of slots here in this conversation. Whether or not you're a slot player, I think you're going to enjoy this just for the perspective of looking at an aspect of the casino and an aspect of gambling. So without further ado, Josh, Know Your Slots. Let's hit record. Josh from Know Your Slots, sir. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. I recently heard you, I've heard you most recently, I should say, on Art in the Game. And I was like, you know what? We don't talk a lot about slots on The Better Life. And I was like, who else better to bring on and talk a little more slots than Josh? Sir, welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
So as my audience knows, I've started taking to slots a little bit more in the past 6 months than I had previously to that. And I definitely see where slots fits into how I play, but it's not every day I get a chance to talk to someone who is really into it and can speak to, you know, what an average to, or what a beginner to an average gambler would need to know about slots. But before we open Pandora's box on these flashy machines, let's start this interview where we start all our interviews, and that's learning about your first exposure to gambling. Do you remember, how far back can you go?
I can go back to 4 years old, actually. And my grandmother and grandfather were a member of a private club that had what I believe to be illicit video poker machines that were in the club. And she would put me up on her knee and we would play it together. And they would always say, he can't be touching that machine. He's not 21. And she said, I don't think you're supposed to have these machines, right? And then they shut up and let us play. So my first exposure was video poker way, way back.
That's incredible. I think not a lot of people have video poker as a first exposure. That's pretty unique, actually.
Yeah, and one of the things that I learned on her knee was, obviously you're not betting your what she called the milk money. You're betting the movie money or whatever entertainment budget. And she was also, you can have fun and you can hoop and holler and have a great time winning $1.50 on a 25-cent bet or whatever, right? So she also encouraged you, just to think, make sure you have the fun that you're going to have when you're gambling.
That's a good lesson to learn early. So you're 4 years old, you see video poker being played in front of you. Now you're an adult and you smash buttons on the slot machine. Bring us through that journey between then and now and how you sort of evolved as a gambler.
Yeah, my first exposure to slots was when I turned 21, like many of us. I live in Connecticut, so we have Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun as our big casinos here. And I drove up to Foxwoods right after my birthday because I wanted to check it out. With $60 in my pocket, went into what I thought was the casino, later to find out it was one of five. Didn't realize how big the property really was. Played quarter slots. I was down to my last couple bucks and had a $60 hit. And I was like, well, I got my money back, so I think I'm done for today. And that was my first exposure. And over time, future trips, go with friends, things like that. And I got to know sort of the casino better, not just slots, of course, but other games like coming back around to video poker and even tables. So.
Yeah. And what, I mean, so what drew you to slots initially? Was it just, it was the, I think a lot of gamblers, I guess I presume a lot of gamblers get attracted to slots because there's really no learning curve or barrier to entry, right? There's no anticipation of walking up to a table and having to know that. So you don't have to like know things like poker and sports betting. You really just walk up, slide money into the machine, and no one bothers you. Do you think that's what it was for you, or was there another attraction for you?
I think that's part of it. I also think that when you're in your 20s and you don't have a big budget, being able to wager 20 cents a spin back when I was in my 20s, it's a little harder now to do that, but that can be attractive. So a friend of mine who lived in another state, she still had family in Connecticut. She would purposely take the casino bus because it was $30, but she would get $30 in vouchers between food and free play. So for her, it was like a free ride to come down to Connecticut, and we would just play very cheap slots and hang out for a couple hours, and that was like a fun afternoon. And so you didn't have to have a big budget to be able to go to the casino. And so I think obviously as people get to know the casino, their budget evolves, they can go in different directions. But I think slots were also the most accessible option versus, a $5 or $10 bet at a time on a table, for instance.
Yeah, and you mentioned other games. What else, what else attracts you on the casino gaming floor?
So I was for a long time, I was really into craps. I had a really a good time playing craps, but sort of hit the negative side of the variance on that for a while and had to kind of walk away for a while. Just was a little bit, when you feel the emotions kind of overtake it, you got to take a step back, and so I sort of gave myself a moratorium on craps for a while, and now I'll play it occasionally. Blackjack, I go on and off with, like sometimes I really I'm into it and sometimes I kind of I'm bored with it. And then video poker is something I can definitely sit down and play for quite a while. I can easily dive into a couple hour session if I'm having a good day and just kind of get into the rhythm of it.
Okay. And I mean, sports betting just went legal in Connecticut. How much do you delve into that, if at all?
I don't feel comfortable enough with sports betting yet to actually delve into that at all. I don't really follow sports personally, so it's already kind of behind the curve from that. And then actually understanding how the bets work, I found a little bit intimidating. So I eventually will figure it out, but I've kind of stayed away for it for now. Other than like, when the online casinos say, here, you can have a free bet. Sure, I'll take that and give it a try.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we'll take free rolls whenever we can get them. Right.
Of course. Yeah.
So I mean, is Know Your Slots is the brand, is the website, but I imagine your first exposure is there in video poker. Clearly, you have to know some of the benefits of video poker. How much does that play into your gambling right now?
So yeah, it kind of it comes and goes. So
Okay.
I find video poker is one of those games that, like, if I'm being beat up on the slots, it's a great way to sort of retreat. And I'm a jacks or better player, so I'm also a low volatility player when it comes to that. I'm not into the triple double or things like that very
Me
often.
too.
So, I think that helps a lot. And then, we don't have the worst pay tables here in Connecticut. On the dollar denomination, you have full pay video poker at both of the casinos, and one of them has it at quarters. You don't earn all the comp benefits, but you still can, play at 99.5%. So when you have that kind of opportunity, it's great to kind of, if you need to take a downshift from slots because they're beating you up, it's a great opportunity and just a way to kind of still enjoy your time at the casino.
So how long have you been doing Know Your Slots? How long has this website been around?
The site launched in May of 2019, and I have posted at least one item every single day since then.
That's incredible. How do you, I can't even fathom. I mean, I can, but I know how difficult that sort of churning of content must be. How do you find, and this is from content creator to content creator, how often do you find yourself stalling, wondering how many more ways are there for me to talk about this?
And when I'm at struggling at my most, I'm usually a couple days away from not having a post scheduled. When I'm at my best, I might be 3 or 4 weeks ahead. And so it kind of goes up and down. The nice thing about what I do is that since it doesn't have to be written in real time, much of what I write is evergreen content. I'm able to, if I get like a good set of material from a casino visit or a trip I've taken or anything like that, I can get myself well ahead of schedule. And usually when I'm running low, it's an indication to me it's time to take another trip of some sort, even if it's one of my local casinos to check around and see what's new and what's going on. So I thought my goal was to try to do it for a year. I've made 3 previous attempts at writing something daily for a year. This is the first time I was successful at it. And now that I've made it almost 3 years through it, I don't know how I would not do it. It's sort of at a point now where I feel like I can constantly come up with ideas. So
yeah, that's amazing. When did you realize that slots offered something of note?
So I've there's sort of a couple of pieces to this answer. I've been in the slot community online for quite some time. I've watched some of the earlier slot content creators that are posting on YouTube. Some of them have been doing it for 10 years now. And I almost went down that path myself, but there were 2 things that stopped me. One is that I don't live near a casino that's very friendly for recording unless you have an audience. So it's sort of a chicken and egg problem,
yeah.
Unless I'm willing to spend the money outside of, New England to do it. And the other is I'm more of a writer. I have a background in journalism. I used to work at a newspaper. And so I feel more comfortable with written content. It just is more natural for me. And so I sort of shifted to thinking like, what could I add to the community? And what I realized was there's a lot of great information out there, but many times it might be a minute 7 of a 20-minute YouTube video, or it might be buried in a social media forum that can't be searched. And then there's also a lot of bad information being passed around. My friend the slot tech told me this, and it's just absolutely nonsense, but people believe it because there's a lot of people who sort of claim to have. And so the other thing for me with the journalism background is how often can I back this information up and point them to something? And so that was sort of one of the sections of the marching orders for the site. And fortunately, there's a lot of really savvy people out there that write a lot of material, and it does over time get pretty easy to know who to rely on. And so that's helped a lot in terms of making the site sort of at least a bit more reputable,
Yeah. What kind of games attract you? Like what type of games do you enjoy? And I guess I'm not necessarily, if you want to mention specific machines, that's great. But I'm wondering maybe more by like function or theme or a feature bonus type, anything like that. Like what gets you excited?
Sometimes something unique gets me excited. There's a lot of slots that copy other mechanics and techniques from other slots. So like, Lightning Link came out and now every machine seems like it has like some sort of hold and spin feature, right? So I kind of find that a little boring at a certain point, although I know there are a lot of people who just are obsessed with that concept. I'll cite a really old example, but it's a game that like always used to draw me in. There was a series of games that came out like a decade ago called Power Spins. And so what would happen is that when a certain symbol would appear, it would bank a free spin that you could use anytime you want. And if you got multiple of them, you could multiply that spin, by however many you collected. And so you could end up with like 10x spin and then just get this something lined up and you would just get this massive win on a very small bet. And so that kind of stuff was really interesting to me just because it was very different from what a slot traditionally was, which was push button, receive money, hopefully, right?
Right.
And so, what's happened in the last few years is because the games have been getting more complex and interesting, you can bet in different ways on the games. Like Dancing Drums is a popular game in the casino, but there's two rows of buttons. And the first row determines how many gold symbols, and that determines not only what jackpots you're playing for, but also what symbols pay the most. But you can get down to an 8 cent bet if you really wanted to by just turning the four of the five gold symbols off. And so if you're a low roller, that's something that's really surprising to find, and you know, because most games don't let you do that. And so there's things like that just kind of interest me. And so there's a lot of games on the casino floor that aren't like that, but there's a percentage that are. And you know, the companies are also experimenting all the time, and so that leads to sort of really weird things that sometimes come out. And I usually find those the most fun to play.
So if let's say I walk up to a machine and I'm like, oh, this looks like fun. I want to try this. I don't have maybe my cell reception's not great on my phone, or I just don't have time or care to like pull up a video. Like, what's the most effective way to like how do you learn how a game works? Because I think this is something that a lot of people have a hard time with when it comes to slot machines, and they don't normally play or they're not used to them. Is you spin a button and you're like, you see a bunch of stuff, you're like, I feel like that should be something, but it's not, right? How do you learn about a game that isn't just Googling how the game works, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so you know, as someone who's in the slot community, one of the benefits that I have is I can see like when games come out, many times a lot of the new channels will play it and show it off right away. And so, you know, if you don't have that benefit, the easiest thing you can do is hit the game rules button, and usually the first screen that pops up is just a summary. So you don't have to read every page in there to know how the game works at a high level. So if there's a hold and spin, it'll tell you that. If there's a free game symbol that you got to get collect three or more of, it'll tell you that. You know, it might not tell you every single line way that you'll pay and things like that, but it'll tell you the basics, so at least you understand what you're looking for and what you're rooting for in the game. So, you know, that the game rules are required to be on every slot. You know, in the olden days, like your double diamonds, they would have it on the glass, and you'd be able to just look, three cherries get me this, right? Now they're buried inside the computer screen, but you can still push that button and it's always there. So, you know, some people aren't readers. So the other way is you can just try to play it out, you know, and hope that you figure it out. But what I've seen many times happen is people either misunderstand what's going on at first and they don't realize what's happening for a bit, which is okay, you know, if you're willing to sacrifice a little budget for that. Or, you know, they just get frustrated and walk away if they don't understand the game at a certain point, which is understandable. But that game rule button is really helpful. And especially many times now, because that first screen is just a summary of everything that's happening.
What's something that you learned about slots early on that surprised you? That is almost when it maybe goes against myths or presumptions that gamblers have about slot machines.
Well, the one myth that I didn't find necessarily surprising, but it's one that I like to always bring up is you should always use your player's card. And it sounds very simple, but the reality is there's a lot of people who say, oh, when I pull my card, I win more, or I get my jackpots, or you know, this casino is like throttling me down when the card is in there, and that's simply not happening. And so what you're actually giving up is one of the only guaranteed paybacks you have, which is the comp dollars you earn for playing and the offers that you get to come back. And so, you know, the player's card is your marketing trade-off, right? You're selling your data to the casino in exchange for those offers and comps. But, you know, it can be a significant, you know, thing for those who have enough of budget at going to the casino. And so I used to always see people talking about that all the time. I looked into it. I talked to someone who worked at a company that makes the player's card software. And, you know, everybody consistently, it's, you know, the player's cards system is not touching the payback of the machine. And so it's just one of those ones that I don't think I was necessarily surprised, but it's certainly one that I think surprises many, or doesn't go in the direction that many people think it would.
Two of the main reasons why I got into slots. One was discovering games that are left in an advantageous state, and then of course almost the fast lane to tier status, right? And
Right.
when you're deciding to play a game based on criteria one, the you know criteria not criteria but you know item two comes as a big bonus, right? Not only are you playing what may be a positive EV situation, but you're getting all those comp dollars and such right behind it.
Yep.
I'm not asking you to give trade secrets or and if you want to pass, you may. But is there a third or fourth item that maybe be on your list of like why or like those are the two big reasons to play from a beneficial standpoint? And yeah, answer that however you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of those points are quite valid, and I think, it's very easy to understand why that is, right? I had someone ask me recently why, like, they don't earn nearly the comps on playing roulette, even if they're betting $10 a wheel, spin versus on slots. And I say, well, how long does it take for that $10 bet to resolve versus how many, dollar bets you can make on a slot machine in the same amount of time? And it becomes very obvious. And then when you factor in the fact that most of the time the house advantage over time is expected to be higher on those slots versus roulette, and so you've got two things working in your favor to get those tier credits faster, right? And usually, the other thing too is many times on slots, you'll get things like point multipliers and things like that at a much higher level than you would on video poker or on tables, if they give it to you on tables or video poker at all. So, if you time it right, you can whittle away at it a little bit. But slots still have a massive advantage for the casino as a whole. So unless you're stepping into a situation where you see a see a really good screen that you can work with on a bankable slot machine, the expectation is the casino is going to win a lot more. But if you're trying to finish up a tier or things like that, it's certainly a quicker way to get it done.
If you go to a new property, and I don't know how much you think into you really think into this, but if you do, I'm curious. If you go to a new property, how much research do you put into like their players club, et cetera, ahead of time so that way you know how you're playing that first day there?
I look more so into what their welcome offer is than the actual player's card itself. And the main reason for that is most of the time, the welcome offer will determine like what benefits you're going to get out of the gate. Because most people don't, so one is like, do they do a tier card match, right? So if you're playing at a casino that's got competition nearby and they accept the card you already have, that can help you potentially earn comps faster because many times higher tiers earn at a faster rate. So that's one thing I look at. And the second is I look at, are they doing a, just sign up and get something offer, or are they doing a play to win offer? So what's becoming more common now with casinos is, let's say, if you play $100, you'll get $10 in free play. And if you play $500, you get $25 in free play. So you can actually, if you're smart, you plan your budget a little bit to try to maximize that offer, because not only are you putting on a good first impression, which usually leads to better offers when they try to get you to come back, but you also will get something out of the gate that's better than if you just sort of went in and played a little and kind of called it a day. So I've used that strategy sometimes, like in bigger markets like Las Vegas. I don't have players cards at certain casinos on the strip even now, because I haven't been able to walk in and take a well good advantage of their welcome offer, because, oh, I know I'm going to be spending 3 nights there and I have an offer I need to sort of maintain there, for instance. So I try to be smart about that. And the example I always give, spending $20 in 10 casinos is going to get you much worse offers across the board than spending $200 in one casino, right? So that's something to keep in mind, especially if you like the casino hop, because that can actually hurt you and hurt the offers that you get.
Even in something that gets sort of lost in this is, even if you're, let's say, downtown and you're casino hopping from Circa to Golden Gate to the D, yeah, it's all still in the same program, but you're still giving fragmented play to different casinos. And while the program itself may reward you in ways like dining credit, when it comes to like free play or other benefits, you're going to diminish your return at each property when you fragment your play like that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point and a great example of sort of the difference, which how knowing how the casinos do that is gives you a leg up. And that's a great example. The D, Golden Gate, and Circa kind of issue separate offers for things like free play in the rooms, but they issue sort of a global offer for food credit, right? So, if you concentrate your play in one location, you might end up with a better free play offer and a better room offer. And then this, the flip side of that is like if you go to Caesars or M Life on the Strip, they do tend to sort of rate all your play across the casinos that they manage. And so, playing, across like say Paris and Bally's and Planet Hollywood, they'll roll that up into a Vegas-wide offer as a general rule. So yeah, knowing how that works is definitely gives you a leg up. And so I do talk about comp programs and how offers work and things like that, just as a subject that's I think important to slot players and everybody, but obviously slot players for sure.
So how did you? I mean, you mentioned at the state you are now, you have connections here and there. You've learned from insiders and whatnot. Not everybody has access to these people or are in a position to be able to do that. But when you were first starting out, what were the resources you went to not just learn about these games, but sort of learn how this whole ecosystem of the casino works and how that benefited your slot play?
Yeah, I mean, there's books out there. There's websites out there run by people like, the Wizard of Odds, Michael Shackelford. He's actually programmed slots for a living. So when he talks about slots and how they work, he's a pretty good person to be able to believe, because he's actually built them and can tell you, you know, how they work under the hood. And obviously he's very smart at math. So when he's doing sort of formulas and recommending things, you can pretty much trust that too. As I've sort of been part of forums and things like that, there have been, you know, casino people who have come in. They're the floor, the sort of the slot executive at Cosmo has interacted in certain forums and will occasionally answer a question that doesn't sort of overstep what he's able to talk about, but still reveal some really interesting information about, like, for example, if you have a multi-denomination slot machine where you can choose penny, nickel, dime, quarter, are the paybacks for all four set the same? And he showed an example of how he could set it differently, without revealing the game or anything like that. So, you know, those types of things are out there if people are looking for it. And that's what I mean when I said I started the site and I was hoping to take some of the fragmented information and sort of bring it all home, is that I can link to those resources because they're publicly available on the web. They're, you know, these are people who are clearly who they are. And then, you know, that can be very helpful to those who had never been to that website and never knew that that information was ever posted there. And so that, I think that's sort of the journalism side of me. It's sort of you can ferret out information, know where to look for payback percentages, like on Nevada's gaming website. And so now I know how the strip pays versus downtown versus, you know, off strip, right? All of that information's out there. And just, you know, over years of doing this, I've become more and more in tune with where this information lives, not even counting who I've then connected with, who's been able to help me even further.
So you're in Connecticut. I have stayed at Foxwoods for a handful of nights for Gamblapalooza a handful of years ago. We swung by Mohegan Sun, and I was just there long enough to win one pass line bet at the craps table, and I think I had like a pizza or something like that, and we bounced. So I'm less familiar with Mohegan Sun. Now we'll call it post-pandemic, as casinos are sort of acting that way. What have you seen out of both of these properties post-pandemic in on the ROI on what you're getting from them on maybe, let's say, comparable play?
So if you look at the casinos just from like a 5,000-foot view, Mohegan Sun seems to be weathering the post pandemic sort of period much better. They seem to be operating more successfully. They don't have so much closed as Foxwoods. And honestly, my offers from Mohegan Sun are also stronger. So I just suspect that they're just operating better right now and are just out maneuvering Foxwoods in terms of the players as a whole. I certainly know people who are very loyal to Foxwoods and have reasons for being so, but not for me. Mohegan's been much, much better post-pandemic as a whole. And I see a lot of people saying the same.
Okay. Which of the two properties do you enjoy better, and why?
Mohegan Sun is much more sort of unified in its build out. It seems like they had a master plan when they put everything together, whereas Foxwoods increasingly just seems like they've been bolting things on. It's like, oh, we're going to throw this tower after, and you have to walk a giant walkway. Oh, now we're going to build a second giant walkway, and that's going to be outlets. And I just don't, they seem to like just sort of be throwing a lot of stuff against the wall to see what will stick. Whereas Mohegan Sun always seemed a bit more put together. Honestly, though, I liked Foxwoods for the longest time, and I think it's because when I was more of a doing more tables, I feel like they treated the table players a little bit better. Whereas I think Mohegan Sun does, if you have a good enough slot concentration, even if it's not all your play, I think they do treat you a little better as a slot player. That's just my experience, but I know others who may disagree, which tends to happen when people gamble different ways at different times, but that's sort of been my experience. I like Mohegan Sun sort of overall thematically. It seems like a better put together property. It's 5 minutes from one end to the other, but you know, there's definitely things to say for Foxwoods that certainly can't be denied either.
Sure. Foxwoods does feel like someone was playing a video game called Sim Casino and was just adding on to the property as the game went on, right? It does have that feel. And it's easy to be like, I remember during Gamblapalooza, like I'd wake, you know, I don't remember what tower, maybe I think it was in Fox Tower, maybe, or whatever. I remember like getting down, someone be like, oh, we're over in this casino. I'd be like, man, that's on the other side of the property. It's so far away. But walking is good for health, so I didn't
Yeah, as I
complain
say, Foxwoods
too
is good
much.
for your step counters. So
Yeah.
if you're looking to walk and gamble, then that's great. And as I said, there's like the five sort of scattered casinos across the building, whereas Mohegan Sun just has the two, and they're big circles, and they're sort of like a small walkway connecting them with the hotel directly in the dead center. So for the most part, you know, it's so much tighter and easier to get around. And so I think it's become a little more attractive to me over time. But I used to love staying in Fox Tower all the time. I used to get offers from them all the time to stay there. And so there's also something to be said about like a small out of the way casino, like where you don't have as much noise and you can kind of still gamble, but not have the sensory overwhelmness that sometimes that happens, you know, when you're playing in a large casino.
Yeah, no kidding. So looking at properties in general, what do you look for in a property? What have like the pick a, you know, give us an example of your favorite properties in Vegas or Atlantic City or where else you've gone. Like, what is about these properties you enjoy? What do you look in, what do you look for in a casino property?
So I'm a little weird that I'm not necessarily looking for the spa and the fancy dinners and stuff like that. I tend to be a utilitarian eater, so I'm usually very good at economizing whatever resort credits and things like that. Although, you know, if I get a good bucket, I'll certainly treat myself. But when it comes to larger markets like Atlantic City or Vegas, I've certainly favored places that have connections to other markets or to home. So, you know, for instance, I favored the Caesars properties for quite a while in Atlantic City, in part because I can then, you know, obviously leverage comp dollars earned there in Vegas and vice versa. And when I first went to Atlantic City, they got me offers to Vegas and so forth. But because of that, since MGM Springfield opened a couple years ago, and it's about as close to me as Foxwoods is, I've found myself gravitating a bit more towards the M Life properties when that happened, because that's been a bit easier, because Atlantic City, by comparison, is like 3.5, 4 hours away from me, right? So,
Right.
I can get up to MGM in an hour. I can, I, what I find myself doing is banking my comp dollars that I earn there, and then bringing it out to Vegas, so I have a bit more budget. Because I don't, you know, if I need to eat, I can get home in an hour, or I can eat cheap there and just be done with it. I usually don't use the money, use that for hotel rooms or anything. So, connectivity to other markets. So, for instance, Mohegan Sun now runs Virgin, and so I've actually stayed there a couple of times since it opened up, and have gotten some pretty good offers from them as a result of that, which, you know, just puts another point in the Mohegan Sun column versus Foxwoods for me now. And so I look at the connectivity of it, because I want it's helpful when your play doesn't have to be redone every time you enter a new market to have status or to have, you know, points available to use or things like that. So what's interesting now is you obviously have Caesars and MGM, but now there's Bally, who bought Bally's Atlantic City and the brand, but they've also bought a bunch of other casinos. They own, they're buying Tropicana in Las Vegas. So you kind of have them. Now you also have Hard Rock, which has announced they're going to do a unified card program. So the Florida casinos, the Mirage, when they take that over, you know, they have Atlantic City, et cetera. They'll all work under the same program. So I think some of these bigger operators are getting wise to that approach, so that way they can sort of keep their players happy regardless of where they are. And so that tends to be sort of attractive to me. And then, of course, obviously, you know, is the comp earnings reasonable for what you're playing? You know, are you able to get, you know, a decent offer based on what you're playing? And, you know, some are better at that than others, frankly. I'll evaluate that sometimes as well.
Sure. What are your first impressions? Give us your first impression of Virgin and then give us your current impression of them now that you've been there a few times.
The rooms are great. I really like the rooms. The first time I was put in the Ruby Tower, which is their premium rooms, so it's got like a living room side and a bedroom side, and then I had a more standard room after that, and I find the beds incredibly comfortable. New hotel, so that could be part of the reason why. But the casino, but on the other hand, is dead. I've gone in there a couple of times and sort of jokingly to myself said, like, are they even open? There's like no one in here. I think, but I like I and I think they were struggling for a bit to get newer games in, because they opened, you know, so delayed because of COVID, that you know, when you lease slots, for instance, you know, it takes a certain amount of time to actually get them in, and if you don't know when you're going to open, you can't. So I think they opened with mostly what Hard Rock had, and they've been fixing that since. So now I think the casino floor has gotten better, but it's still dead. But I do like the hotel, and you know, being strip adjacent, it's certainly a good option for those who don't mind having a little bit of a hike to get over to the strip.
Do you think you would be into slots the way that you are if there wasn't a players club to benefit from? And this question comes from you know, I can play craps with full understanding that I'm probably not getting anything back from the casino while I play that session, or you know, I don't expect much back. But I don't know if I would play much machine gaming without it. What are your thoughts there?
I think that there's some validity to that, but then again, there are many people who play at the McCarran Airport, or I guess Harry Reid Airport now, and there's no card reader there either, right? So I think if the game is interesting enough, or it can capture your attention, I still think that that would be the thing. But I think maybe I would be more selective, because I think, you know, obviously part of what I'm getting out of it is taken away, and obviously if I don't have offers and comps, and you know, I don't know if I'd make as many as frequent a trip to the casino to begin with, right? So, yeah, I think I would play a little bit less. But that being said, you know, we got online gaming in Connecticut in October. I started to tinker with it just so I could, you know, understand how it all worked, and I caught a wild tear where I just kept winning every time I put money in for a good 3 months. And I sort of shut myself off because I was like, it's going to go the other way at some point. But like, you know, that's the other half of it, right? Like if you have a couple of winning sessions in a row, it can also sort of distort sort of your mindset about it at time versus if you've been beaten down three or four visits in a row, you know?
So I was playing, this happened about a month ago. I was playing Buffalo Diamond, probably my favorite game right now. And the 3X, Josh, got up to 165 free games.
That's huge.
It was huge, right? And I'm sitting and like I'm burning through some money to get there, right? I mean, it took about 4.5 hours from the moment in which I think I sat, I can't remember what the number was when I sat down, but I started playing it because it was just beyond the threshold for me to play. And for about 4.5 hours, I was playing, which was actually kind of short considering how big of a how far up it went. And it finally triggered, and I felt more relief than anything. Right? It was like I wasn't even excited about the pay yet. I was like, oh, thank goodness. My whole day had shifted, right? And then the payback was just atrocious. I
Oh,
mean,
gosh.
it was, I had for 165 games, I've won more on the 2X with 30 games than I won on this 165 free game thing at a 2 cent denomination, no less.
Oh my.
And I was like kind of sitting there almost dumbfounded. I was like, that almost doesn't even make any sense. Like I was like, it's almost difficult, you know, like it's negative variance compounded on negative variance. And I share that story to be like, sometimes like it's funny how no matter, you know, objectively, I know that was a good situation to be in, right? The 165 free game should deliver. And I started playing at a reasonable time to start playing at where it was. But it doesn't matter if it's a big sports bet with a great number, you know, it doesn't matter. You could have had the Falcons right in the Super Bowl. And, you know, it doesn't matter where, like something could come back and cause you to like take a huge loss. And it's difficult, you know, it's like I just need to step away for a little bit. I have not hit spin on the Buffalo Diamond machine since. Just because I was like, I need a break from slots for a little bit, which is crazy because I was on an amazing run up until that point, but that was such a punch to the gut that I was like, I need a break.
I totally get that. And that game in particular, you know, because it leverages the Buffalo mechanic, which itself is a very volatile mechanic to begin with. And, you know, it's an open-ended counter. And so it's just, you know, and Buffalo games, you can get 100 spins and get nothing, and you can get, you know, 20 spins and get everything. And so it's a tough game. And that's the problem with those types of things, is that that's a game where luck certainly still has its weight in whether you succeed or not. You know, it's not like walking up to a scarab on spin 9 of 10. You know, the next spin you hit, they're going to go wild. So
Right.
you know, but of course the payoff potential much higher on Buffalo Diamond versus that. So
Right.
that tends to be a bit rich for my blood, but I certainly understand the allure of it.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the Global Gaming Expo?
Yeah, actually, I went for the first time this past October,
Oh.
which was really cool. You know, obviously they went physical back after a year virtual, and so I was able to time it well and get out there. And by this time now, I have some connections with some of the companies, so I've got to go in and actually get some personalized tours and things like that, and just learn what they were up to. And that's always fascinating, just to see which direction they're headed.
Okay. Did you attend just as an attendee, or were you in on a media credential, or how did you attend?
Just had a free pass from one of the casino companies that give them
Yeah.
out to a certain number of people, you know, because they obviously need to bring people in too. And so that worked out great. Yeah, so I didn't even have to pay for a ticket, so it was lovely.
When I was at the council block, when I was at, I know this is all over the place, but forgive me. When I was at Council Bluffs, Ameristar Council Bluffs, recently, I was playing on their Roll to Win craps table. And this is the first time I'd ever seen this, but to tip the dealer from the terminal, it didn't electronically move my tip. It printed me a voucher that I then gave to the dealer, which at that table, I was like, this is dumb. But it did make me think this would be super handy at a slot machine, because when my cocktail waitress comes around and I want to tip her, but don't have anything smaller than a 20 on me. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to be able to print out a tip from my balance on the slot machine and give her the voucher. Have you seen anything like this in a slot machine? Do you think that's a good idea?
So I haven't seen anything like that with a slot machine. There's obviously this move towards cashless, which unfortunately the way everything I'm seeing makes me laugh hysterically because it's about 20 times harder than putting a bill into the machine and hitting play. I suspect that things will move in that direction over time and that opportunity will be there. But I'm with you. Like I can't tell you how often I feel like ashamed. Like I only have a 20, can you get me change? And then she has to go walk to a bill breaker on my behalf because I'm too lazy to get up myself and get the money for her. But you know, they're usually pretty kind about it. I throw a couple extra bucks their way for doing that. But I think that kind of thing is actually a really good use of that kind of technology if they can get there and, be able to print like a partial ticket as opposed to just like whatever's in there, you get your whole ticket.
What is something that isn't like, I imagine you've played enough slot machines now and know enough about the industry, et cetera, where you've thought, I wonder why no one's done this yet. Is there anything like, does that ring a bell on any thought you've had that you're willing to share here?
No, because if I really had that good of an idea, I would try to sell it, right? But if I take cashless again, I'm just baffled as to why they think the way that they're setting this up is ever going to be successful. You know, you think about like technology and casino gaming is historically attracts an older population. They're trying obviously to attract a younger one, and they're everything from skill gaming to sports betting to other stuff, and they're throwing everything at the wall to see what they can do. Can you imagine a 70-year-old person having to like create an account, upload money from their bank account, type in this PIN, type in how much they want on a screen that may or may not be calibrated, and then return the money back. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And it's like, why wouldn't they just walk in, go to the ATM, even if it costs a few bucks? Because by the way, cashless costs you 2% to put money on the account most of the time. So it's like, you're not saving the ATM fees. You're probably actually paying more. And so it's like, I just don't get I don't get why they think this is going to be such a big deal. I get that like not having to carry cash in your pocket, less risky, that sort of thing, sure. But if it takes, five more minutes, cumulatively every hour to get money into the machine, that's just less wagering you can do. So it's also slowing the player down. So usually the goal is to speed them up.
I think your point on, for lack of a return, elderly gamblers is one that I actually haven't heard enough here. And you're absolutely right. We've all been to that local casino where on a Thursday afternoon, everybody who's in the joint is a retiree who's just enjoying life. And are we really going to ask them to would local casinos risk losing that customer base because they got frustrated with the technology? No way.
And the good news though is that unlike when they went from coins to ticket in, ticket out, there's nothing that says that they have to get rid of ticket in, ticket out to add this. So they don't have to turn. So this is a little bit less of an abrupt transition, right?
Yeah.
But Mohegan Sun has had a version of this, I want to say for like 5 years. I've never once seen a player actually putting money into their slot with or at a table game with the system, even though it's the same system that Resorts World rolled out last summer to fanfare. It's like, we have cashless here, right? The same company. So to me, it just feels like it's a stretch unless they make it simpler. But I think that, over time, they'll figure out ways to make it simpler and then maybe it starts to make more sense.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm really curious on how long it's going to take. I know they're trying to get the cashless systems, faster than they probably need to. But I'm curious to see how long it takes for cashless to not only be the primary way of getting money in and out of the casino games, et cetera, but that it's being used as well and as favorably as, like, I wonder if they're going to see a dip in customers at the, at the first point in which the cashless is like the primary or possibly the only option to get money in and money out, or if there will be enough people savvy with it by then and enough degenerates that'll just figure out a way that it'll be a seamless transition.
Yeah, or you might see things like that they've done in other situations, like some casinos didn't flip all their machines from coins to tickets right away, right? So maybe you have a room where in the casino where they set up a cashless only room and those people who are comfortable with it and use it, and then those who aren't can still use the rest of the casino, right? And like you sort of transition over time, you know, because obviously getting rid of cash, getting rid of, you know, more moving parts simply makes the machines more reliable, lowers your cost of ownership, lowers your staffing requirements, et cetera, right? So there's certainly, you can understand the casino's sort of bottom line value to moving to these systems. But, you know, if players are slower to adopt, you know, there were still coin slots at Circus Circus the last time I went there. El Cortez still has coin slots in video poker. So, you know, if there's a market for it and people want to serve it, it'll probably still stick around. I think it's going to be a very slow transition. I don't think the urgency is here the way it was with coins because, you know, unlike coins, which are heavy and harder to move around and very dirty, you know, you're only touching the bill once, you know, and then the credits are on the machine for however long you play. And so I think it's, you know, so they only have to really empty the machines generally once a day. So I don't think the pressure is there quite as much as it was when coins were the big thing.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about slot channels because I can't talk to a slot person without talking about slot channels. And it's going to sound like I'm critical of them, but it's morally a lack of familiarity of them is more where this comes from. Do you think slot channels, like, I feel like we're oversaturated with slot channels at this point and that, we've reached a point where from my perspective, and please correct me and inform me where I may be wrong or misunderstanding, but it seems like unless you have sort of crossed the threshold where you're sustainable with your channel, it's almost like you're spending money at the slot machine to then not make money on your YouTube channel, if that makes sense. Am I missing something there? What are your thoughts on the sustainability of slot channels?
I mean, I would have probably said the same thing 4 or 5 years ago. If you're starting a slot channel to pay for your slots, I think you need to reconsider your goals with this, because usually slot channels make people be more inclined to play more, not less. And so it just becomes a moving target, right? So, you know, part of the challenge there is in, like, can you overcome a certain level to actually get to the point where you can generally rely on the ad revenue from YouTube or whatever else you do, you know, some have Patreon, some sell merch, whatever the case may be, right? But the reality is like many people will never get to that point. If you're filming gambling you're already doing and you're just putting those clips up there, like Diana Avani, that's how she started. She was just filming her play with friends and she was sharing it, you know, as part of her blogs originally, and then having the video, and the video just kind of became the primary mechanism which she shared it. But she's always been kind of that way. And over time she's grown an audience. And so, you know, I think if you're doing something like that, that's different, because it's not like you're purposely going to the casino to film content for your channel. You're just already there and you're filming while you're there. So I think there's a very key difference there. And I think the other thing for the watchers is to remember that they, you know, slot channels can be selective on what they upload. If they have a really crappy session on Buffalo Diamond, you know, you might not put a 4.5 hour video up. You might just put the, hey, I just hit this 160 games and here's my outcome, which itself was bad, but at least it's something interesting, right? So, you know, that's the other thing too. So you shouldn't take slot play that you see online and presume that's how the game's going to be when you get there. That said, I do think slot channels are very helpful in understanding how a game works. You can see, especially with live play, you know, how a game plays, how often you get hits versus misses, you know, how often the bonus comes around. You know, certainly there's variance in all of that, but you do get a little bit of a feel for the game before you've spent a cent. And so sometimes I'll check out games online before I play personally, just to see sort of how others have fared and then see how my session compares.
That's a good point on that. I definitely see the educational piece on that. I'll, at the very least, becoming familiar with something ahead of time or learning more about it. Where I sort of chuckled at slot channels is, you know, like, I get bored playing slots on my own, right? Like, I get bored with my own slot machine, let alone watching somebody else. But that's, you know, I suppose when you're playing, I play a very acute set of games. And so that's probably what's happening with me there. I can definitely see playing other games or new games exciting.
And I'll say, you know, as someone who's been, as I said, watching these for 10 years, you know, I work from home. So my day job, I work from home. And so I have YouTube up sort of in the background many times. So I'm not necessarily watching every single minute of play, especially when it's just kind of, you know, go rolling along. But if something if I hear a sound of something interesting and it catches my ear, maybe I'll flip over and watch that couple of minutes, right? So I think, you know, and I hate to say this on a podcast, but, you know, there was a period of time where I had an hour and a half commute each direction, and I would listen to hours and hours of podcasts every day. And now now I just don't have the same bandwidth for that as I did before. And so I'm just more selective. So I think that's the other thing that happens is like, you know, for those of us who watched a lot of this over the years, we get a bit more selective over time. We might not watch every video every day of every person that we follow, you know, just like anything on YouTube, you know, you tune into what you have the bandwidth for and so forth. But I agree with you about the saturation part. You know, there's just so much of it out there, you know, that's just overwhelming. But I hate to draw the podcast analogy, but there's a little bit of that too. But people, you know, will gravitate to the good ones, and people will gravitate to the ones that give them the most of what they're looking for. And so I think that, you know, you can still break through, but it's certainly a lot harder now than, you know, in the earlier days of YouTube when there was a lot less of everything.
Yeah. I think podcasts are a great analogy because we all felt that hit at the beginning of the pandemic, right? People weren't commuting. And so unless they wanted to listen to you while they walked their dog or go for a run, my listenership dropped significantly in March and April of 2020, right? And it was, there was a couple factors, but the pandemic was definitely one of them. And it took about a year to get back on the other side of where I was. I have my 3-4 podcasts that I listen to on a weekly basis. Then I have the next 2 or 3 that I listen to when I have either extra time or I'm actually like on a longer road trip. And then I still have podcasts that I'm subscribed to because I like them that I have like 30 episodes to go through. And I might listen to one episode a month, but I'm still like, I refuse to unsubscribe or archive those episodes because I do enjoy that show. And so as a podcaster, I have to recognize that I'm not everybody's favorite show. I might be the 4th and 5th on someone else's list where they're getting around to me every 2 or 3 weeks. I might be the 20th where they might get to me every 3 to 4 months. Right. So,
right.
I think podcasting is a good analogy because YouTube channels they behave in a very similar way, and I imagine the slot channels are the same. And I never even really thought about slot channels being sort of background noise, if you will, to work and such, but that makes a lot of sense.
If I can throw in there too, by the way, please. You know, when the pandemic hit, I'm very reliant on search engine traffic because of the content that I do. And when the casinos closed, it was like the floor fell out under the site. And I was less than a year in at that point. And I was sort of thinking to myself, well, is this it? Or do I need to, you know, I wasn't nearly that far off down the path where it's like, oh, I'm dependent on revenue from the site or anything like that. It's always been sort of a bonus for me. But, you know, I certainly saw the traffic drop. I was like, ooh, this is tough. And then when the casino started reopening in June, you started to see it come back. But yeah, it didn't take me quite a year, but I had a similar dip. And I think a lot of us, unfortunately, just, you know, in content world, you know, when the situations change, it can both positively or negatively affect us. And so, that's a bummer to hear, but I'm glad that hopefully things are kind of back to being more stable now.
Yeah, we're getting there. I have my core fans really, really carried me through that. And I appreciate all of them for it. One more question on slot channels. Something that maybe my biggest pain point on slot channels and, when I watch the big ones, and I'm not going to name them, but we know who they are. When I watch the big ones, something that I have, something that I struggle with is the almost the disingenuine stress or excitement that comes from the person playing, knowing that the ups and downs of what they're experiencing isn't close to what maybe a viewer might experience in the same situation. And the reason why I struggle with it is not because I necessarily think like, oh, this is disingenuous and that's wrong. I actually understand why they're doing it because they're still an entertainer and they still need to perform and entertain. And I totally get that. And so I struggle with that dissonance of, I understand that this is how they should behave because they're performing and they're entertaining. But at the same time, it almost feels weird to watch them get excited or like to watch them stress out about getting a possible bonus when I know they were paid by the casino to do this. Right. And so what are your thoughts there? Do you care to address that?
So I can't speak with any knowledge of the casino and payments or anything like that, obviously, but I have met some slot channels and gotten to know them over the years. And, you know, even if you're getting paid money to do something, that doesn't make it any less stressful if you're winning or losing, because slots are still actual cash, right? So I think to some degree, and I've definitely seen examples of what you're talking about where it seems like the reaction is a bit more forced, right? But like I've also sat next to people who I would think, oh, they're betting at a level that I would think is very comfortable for them, but I can see them sweating the losses, and you know, like getting an unexpected hand pay can still be very exciting for them. And you know, going back to the original example with my grandmother and the 25 cents on her knee, and just I think some people are just better at still being able to retain that excitement regardless of the stakes that are going on than others. And I think that sometimes shines through in the content, frankly. So you do have some that do a little bit better than others, but you're correct. You know, it's still entertainment. There's still, you know, an audience that's watching. And so, you know, you do have a switch you have to flip when you're on camera, you know, whether you're an actor or a YouTube slot channel, I guess, right? But for me, it's that the stakes feel very, very real because it's, you know, coming out of my paycheck, but you know, it's their paycheck in a different form. So I guess there's still a little bit of that going on.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. I think that's a great way to sort of come back around to when it's your original story there. Josh, if anybody's listening to this and they're like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about, I might be interested in hearing or reading what he has to say. Where can people read your stuff? And, you know, how often do you find yourself at your local casinos? Is there a chance people could run into you?
Yeah, so I'll start with the sites, knowyourslots.com. I publish, as I said, once a day, usually 10 a.m. Eastern, a new piece of content, whether it be about comps, slots, travel. I do write up sort of my experiences at casinos and so forth to share sort of what I've seen. And then as far as, you know, gambling, right now, I've been kind of on a weird pattern where I've been doing a bigger trip of some sort once a month as opposed to like a weekly to the local or something like that. I came back from a cruise a few weeks ago. I was in Las Vegas in January. But, you know, locally, I tend to try to get out, you know, once or twice a month if I'm not going somewhere else with a bigger budget, which is probably going to be the case for the next few months. So if you're in New England, and you probably have a chance of finding me at Mohegan Sun or MGM Springfield primarily, but occasionally Foxwoods as well. So.
Well, very good. Josh, I hope I get a chance to maybe spin some slots or maybe throw some dice even at some point with you. And maybe even in Springfield, if we can work that out. Springfield is on my short list of places to try to go to in the next calendar year. So maybe we can find a time to rub elbows at the slot machine. This has been an absolute pleasure, Josh. Thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, of course, as I'm recording this, I was like, wait, I think the Chattanooga game has already started. And I look and I see that Chattanooga's up 16-6 early in the first half. And I'm trying to not get excited. But that's March Madness. And I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I'm going to check back in a little bit when they're halfway through the second half before I decide how I feel about that game. How wonderful was Josh? Such great insight, really easy conversation. It was a blast and a pleasure to have him on, and I hope to get a chance to hang out with him at Casino one day. Okay, for those of you that hang out to this portion of the episode, you're hanging out for either updates on the Better Life, on trips, or all things involving the community, this brand, etc. So we have a number of things. Let's start with Biloxi. Nothing has really changed with Biloxi. My plan is still to get in the 31st. I'm there until the 4th. I do believe that the plan will be to pretty much do things sort of with the group for the duration of by the group, I mean like whatever it is that we sort of broadcast, where we're going here, there, sort of what the general consensus is, the little meetups that the cocktail meetups that Rob has suggested. That'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Sunday, probably do a little bit of my own thing. I'll probably invite some people to hang out with me at maybe a property or two where I just want to put in some play and establish a relationship. And then on Monday, very much just going to be to myself, probably try to produce some content, and then, of course, start making my way back home. So that is Biloxi. I am trying to figure out what I'm going to do content-wise for Biloxi, at least for the podcast. I put up a poll on Twitter, twitter.com/thebetterlife, or @thebetterlife is the Twitter handle, okay? I want to know if when it comes to trips like this, like Biloxi, Vegas Vacation's a great example, Gamble Palooza is a great example, these trips that are gambling related or community meetups, do you prefer to hear a trip preview? Do you prefer to hear a trip review? And by prefer, I mean, like, do you want to hear a episode where the bulk of it is a trip preview, or the bulk of it is a trip review, so after the fact? Do you like both? Do you prefer both and want to hear both a before and after? Or neither? Or are you just like, you know what, just give us the cliff notes and move on? That is an option as well. So go to... I mean, if you're listening to this in the first 18 to 20 hours of this being released, the poll will still be up there. Twitter.com/TheBetterLife or @TheBetterLife on Twitter. Please vote in that poll so that way I can plan content around Biloxi. Okay, Vegas Vacation 11 has been announced by 360 Vegas. It is June 12th through the 14th. I will be there. There's a 90% chance that I will be there. That 10% chance is possible, but I like my odds at 90%. So I am planning on being there. I'm going to start. I looked quickly on the calendar. I actually didn't see anything in the calendar on My Choice or MGM or these other that really stood out to me on the Strip or anywhere down there. There's a chance that I actually stay at Virgin this time around. I have the offer from them. I'm confident I can get the Sunday through Wednesday. That's probably what my trip will be. I'll probably try to get in on Sunday and stay till Wednesday. And yeah, there's a chance I stay at Virgin for this trip, but that's a few months down the road. I do plan on being down there. I plan on being involved in the cocktail event and the cigar event if there's room by the time I get a chance to RSVP. So if you want to come, look, it's whether or not I'm there, it's a fantastic event. The community is amazing. Mark and Karen are very gracious sort of with their time and getting to know the people that show up. Tony, of course, is a hoot. So I highly recommend Vegas Vacation for anybody who is looking for a reason to go to Vegas and wants to meet other people, a part of the Vegas community. And there's still plenty of gamblers in there as well. So I plan on being there. I hope to see you there as well. Pittsburgh. Nothing has really advanced in the Pittsburgh idea. Still holding strong with the day of the 14th. I think the only update there might be is not a lot of interest in a soccer game, which is fine. I wanted to put it out there because I'm going to that soccer game no matter what. And I figured, well, let me put this idea out there in case there's other interest. Maybe we can make it a thing. Didn't get a whole lot of response in the soccer. Plenty of you saying, hey, I plan on swinging by at some point. Would love to, you know, come throw dice or have a cocktail, whatever it may be. So it sounds like there's a decent amount of interest of people coming out that weekend. Again, Rivers Casino on the 14th. I'll be going to the Pittsburgh Riverhound game that evening. Probably go do some tailgating with listener Dan, who's also a Riverhounds fan who's in Pittsburgh. So I'll probably be out of pocket for 3 or 4 hours for that game, but I will be around the bulk of that day. I'll be out for the game. I'll come back to the casino after the game, and then the next day, the 15th, probably head down to Meadows and check out Meadows Casino as well. So that's the update. So if you are interested in coming to the soccer match, please tell me so that way we can maybe find a way to sort of get tickets sort of near each other, or maybe we'll just do general admission if that I'm sure the Riverhound have something like that. But probably no formal gathering going out to the soccer match with the interest level thus far, which is sort of what I anticipated. But again, I just wanted to put it out there in case maybe I was wrong. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the podcast with a monthly pledge. Thank you for everybody who supports me there. Little adjustment that I'm making to the side bets over there. Side bets being the audio that I've been attempting to do. I mean, it started off pretty good when I started doing it last year. Daily audio, Monday through Friday, little 5 to 7 minute audio clips of something gambling related, gambling casino related. And it would be typically a week where the week would have a theme. By the way, Chattanooga's up now 20-7, not getting excited. It would be a theme per week, and then I'd have 5 installments. Well, I realize that I've been leaving out good ideas because I couldn't think of five topics or whatever to talk about a topic. I've realized that I've fallen short on weeks because I thought I could get to five and I couldn't. And I'll just be honest, life gets in the way. And when life gets in the way and Monday morning hits and I haven't put anything together yet, that usually means I'm going to miss at least one day that week. And it makes me feel bad as a content creator. No one's holding me accountable to this except for myself. And I'm sure plenty of you but I'm sure at least one of you is disappointed or, you know, come over maybe expecting something or hoping something, not getting it. And that's disappointing. So to make life easier for me and to not fall short on those commitments, I am doing one episode per week over there on Patreon, patreon.com/thebetterlife. Every pledge level has access to this audio. But instead of doing a theme or a topic for the week and chopping up into five episodes, I am just going to take that topic. And if I have 3 points, 4 points, 5 points, one general point, maybe I just want to monologue for 15 minutes, whatever it may be, that'll get put out. I haven't figured out really which day of the week is maybe going to work best for me, but likely early on in the week. So it'll be a nice little appetizer to the main episode, even though it probably won't have any sort of tie-in. Maybe it will. We'll figure that out. But that's an adjustment being made over there. Patreon.com/thebetterlife. Bettermerch.com is where you can purchase some merchandise for your casino going, the struggle is real video poker shirts, coffee dice, coffee mugs. Thank you everybody who supports the show that way. I know the Better Life brand t-shirts are low in inventory. That is, I am going to restock that inventory soon. So those will be available in all of the sizes pretty soon. Tip Your Dealer shirts, also they are available in both blue and black and silver. I think that's it. I'm probably missing something that I thought earlier in the week, like, oh, I should make sure I talk about this, but I can't remember what it was, and I don't know. I did a poor job of writing it down. I'll cover sort of where I am in the first quarter of gambling, probably in the episode before Biloxi, leading into Biloxi. I'll sort of make a marker on where I am gambling wise. I think I'm slightly up on the year, even though the year started off great, and then it took a nosedive in a 2 week span, and then it's been trickling upward. So I think I'm okay there. Sports has been pretty good. Soccer, USL has been fantastic, but I'll update that then. Yeah, that'll do it. Gonna wrap this up. Thank you, everybody, for listening. On behalf of Josh from Know Your Slots, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.